Hey, John from FatSexBlog.com here. Today, I want to step you through my good content checklist. It's a lot of items. This can be a longer than usual podcast. Okay, so when planning and publishing content, I don't go through all of these items for every article, but when there's an important article, I will, and most of these points will apply to most content. But generally speaking, if I look across all my content, what I'm going to list through and talk about today is essentially what I consider quality checkpoints for ensuring that content is up to snuff for a website. This is not going to guarantee top rankings. It's just doing your best to put out a really good article. All right. So first off, point number one, it ranks number one in Google. Now, I jest, okay? It's the tail wagging the dog here. First off, not every article that ranks number one in Google for a particular search is the best article on that topic on the web, not by a long shot. You can publish mediocre content and rank number one. You can also publish the best article on the web on a particular topic and not get number one. But generally speaking, I would say these days, content that does rank number one in Google for searches is generally pretty good content. Google definitely does a better job now than, say, 10 years ago in ranking in the top spots good content. So if you have a bunch of number one rankings already, then you have an advantage because you can go back and look at the content and really assess about at what level of quality and the various checkpoints and the features you include in that content that achieve that number one ranking. One of the most valuable data points that I have at this point in my online publishing business is that I have a number of websites with a lot of number one, two, and three rankings in Google. And that data is pure gold because I can basically reverse engineer what's working on my sites and replicate that. So if you also have a lot of number one rankings, use that data, look at what's ranking and assess, you know, what is it about that content that ranks number one? And do it again and again and again. If you're just getting starting out, you don't have this advantage. So you just need to keep plugging along, do your best. And in time, you should, if you do really good keyword research, get number one rankings or number two, and then you can use that data as well. So, which leads me to number two. A really important part of the good content checklist here is the keyword research. Now, there are, I could do a whole series of podcasts on keyword research, so I'm going to be brief here, but you know, my approach is very simple. I look to mostly go after keywords and topics for articles that are fairly easy to rank. I don't invest time and money much into link building. So if I want to rank, I need to look for those gaps in content or content that's already published on a particular topic, but it's not very good and I can do a better job. Or for my larger sites, I can leverage some of that site authority and create internal links and rank content. So I go for the low competition stuff. You know, there's a really good argument and there's a lot of successful sites out there that go for a lot more competitive, more lucrative keywords out there. They usually do some link building. When one or two of those hit and rank number one or two in Google, they can be very lucrative and generate a lot of revenue. So I don't knock that. I don't say that that's a bad model. It's just I have my preference. I have my ways of doing things. So keyword research is really important when you are putting out content. And in my view, depends how you go about it, but if you're going to do the low competition thing, if you do your keyword research right, you know, half the battle is won. After that, it's just putting out a half decent article. Okay. So that's what I have found. It's just so much easier to rank for something that really doesn't have anything serving that topic, or if there is something that's not very good, it's so easy. And so that's my MO. All right. Number three, it successfully entertains, informs, inspires, humors, or educates. Okay. A piece of content should have one or two main purposes to it. This is really important. This took me a number of years to figure out. I think a lot of us do this intuitively. We publish content, we order content, publish it or write it. And we have an intuitive implied goal with that content. But I think it's important when you're actually doing this to understand that your content's serving a particular purpose, because that's going to help determine how you go about putting that piece of content together. Okay. Most, I would say like 95% or more of the content that I publish is to inform. It, my sites are evergreen niche sites, and most of the content is informative for the most part. Some of it is to inspire, especially in some of my visual niches. Fat Stacks, there's a inspiration element to it, so that's a little bit different. But there's also sites out there that are there more to entertain than inform, and in which case that's gonna be done in a different way. Maybe it entertains via the writing. Maybe it's humorous writing. Maybe it's very good writing. Maybe people appreciate the good writing. Maybe it's an opinion article and people, you know, reading about opinions. That's both a hybrid of being informed and entertaining. I like to read a good opinion piece on a particular issue. I'm being entertained, but I'm also learning something. So think about what the actual purpose of your content is. It makes a big difference in how you go about it. Generally speaking, content's going to serve a purpose of either entertaining, informing, inspiring, humoring, and or educating. Now, I can do multiple of those, but keep that in mind when you're putting your content together. All right. Next point, whatever you think is good. Now, I partly jest, but I'm also serious. Now, if you're a half-decent writer, you're going to know when you either receive from a writer or put together yourself a really good article. I know. I'm not surprised by a lot of the content that ranks number one or two on my sites because I know it's really good. And so it just so happens that a lot of content that's decent but not stellar also ranks number one. But I know the content that is the best content on my sites. And there might be maybe 30 or 40 of them on a larger site. And I just know, and I know when I produce a particular article or get one, I just know it's excellent. So you'll know it. And I think that it often pays off. I can tell you from experience to put that extra oomph into an article, especially if you're going after a slightly bigger keyword, because I've done that. I've spent time on articles. You know, I thought it would maybe take me 4 hours to produce an article, and I'm still on it 3 days later, and I'm still creating it, and it's awesome, and it's four times longer than I thought, but it's just really dense, good, helpful information, and I publish it, and sure enough, it ranks number one. It takes several months, but you know, I'm not surprised by that because it's so good. Okay, so you'll know it, and I think that you want to rely on your own sniff test for your own content, knowing when it's good, and err generally as much as you can on hitting that stellar or epic. But there's also a very good argument to be said that, you know, just blasting out a bunch of stuff out there, especially when you're outsourcing, can work well, because I do this as well. I'll blast a bunch of stuff. I don't even really review it. I do have some people do review content that's all coming in and improving it and so forth. And if I review it, I know it's like, okay, well this is actually pretty good. It's not stellar. It could be better, but it's good enough. And let's see how it does. And I can always go back and make it stellar. Okay. And I've done that a lot of content, gone back and really improved it. So, you know, there's an argument he said it doesn't need to be perfect. No article will be perfect, but, you know, it does have to hit a certain standard. It's got to be good. But you know, you don't have to like sweat blood and tears for, every single article you put out there. Next up, the introduction. Okay. Now, I'm flip-flopping here because for years I've talked about the importance of writing a really good introduction, not for Google search or computers, but for people. And there are a number of simple ways that I do that. And it doesn't have to be a long intro. I don't like really long, fluffy intros. Unfortunately, a lot of writing services have this thing about just they fill up like 400 words of the order with an intro. Drives me insane. I go nuts when that happens because I tell them specifically, keep the intro interesting but short. Okay. Neil Patel recently, I think it was after the July 2021 Google update, came out with a really interesting observation. I don't know if it's true or not, but it makes sense to me. And he's found that his articles that put a really concise synopsis of his article right at the top, basically answering the question or giving the Coles Notes version right at the top, tended to fare better with the Google update. And I like that with content. Business Insider is a really great site that does this for almost all of its articles. It usually has between 1 and 4 bullet points that basically tells you everything about the article right at the top. And I find that really useful as a user. So I'm not surprised that Google might actually be considering this as part of an on-site ranking factor. And so it's something to keep in mind when you're putting your articles together. So what I'm doing now is I'll put the concise statement of the article right at the top, and then I'll put more of an engaging, interesting introduction after that, and then go into the heart of the article. And so that's my new MO, and I suggest you give it a shot. I don't see that there's any downside to this. I can't imagine that there's a downside to basically answering the question right at the top of the article. Okay, so I don't think there's any risk here in changing this up at all. Next up, coin terms. This could be fun. Not everything's going to take, of course, but you remember, you're an online publisher and you have readers, and hopefully you're going to have more readers, and you can have fun with language and words and coin terms, whether they're going to take, whether any other site quotes you on it or not. It doesn't, I don't particularly care about that. I just like trying to come up with clever terms for things. So, you know, with FatSacks, I've done that. With some of my other sites, I've done that when I write articles. Writers I hire typically aren't going to do this and put this level of thought in things unless you specifically ask them to. And the reason I do this, because it makes the writing interesting. And who knows, what if a term actually takes off and people, it becomes like a popular term within the niche, and you could actually get a lot of natural inbound links as a result of it as the person who coined that term. So I kind of do this. It's fun. An example would be the crank and bank term. I'm not saying that that is a coined term. It's super popular in the industry or anything, but it's been referenced, and it's just basically, you know, is a term that explains how I go about publishing niche sites, which is crank out a ton of content targeting low competition keywords. So have fun with it. Again, it's not, obviously it's not something you have to do for every article or even most. Next up, slang and emojis. Now slang is difficult. It depends on your audience. It depends on your niche. And, you know, some niches really work well with a much more informal style and voice. And, you know, you can inject slang and even profanity if you want. Don't go too heavy on the profanity, because you might get some issues with advertising. A little here and there is okay. If you want to just go totally nuts with profanity, that's great. A lot of websites do, and the audience likes it. But just keep in mind, the advertisers might take issue with it. So slang and emojis can be fun. They can sort of add a certain casualness to article. Most of my content does not include slang and emojis. It's just not the type of sites that the people would really appreciate it, I don't think. I don't really do it on FatSacks. It's not my style, but it's something to keep in mind. And if it's your style, it can actually work quite well. Be thorough. Thorough is something I really put a lot of emphasis on. Whether I'm hiring writers to write articles or do it myself, I really like to cover a topic really, really well. And there is, on my sites, a lot of overlap between information. You know, I might have the same kind of similar information in one article as another, even though they're different topics. And that's okay. And often what I'm doing now is when I sort of see that there's this type of a little bit of a subtopic that seems to sort of come up in multiple articles, I'll actually create a whole new article and really flesh that particular subtopic out on the site as well. So there's going to be overlap, but I want my articles to be the one-stop shop that people, when they're looking for whatever it is the main keyword is, they're going to come to the site and they're going to come to that article and they're going to get pretty much everything they need for that article. And if it's not there, there's links in that article to another article on my site, and so that they can get fully informed. That's the sort of way I envision building my sites. That's what I want to be able to do for visitors. It's not perfect, but that is my intent. Next up, your content follows a logical sequence. I'm fortunate. I'm not the best writer in the world. I'm an okay writer. One strength I have, though, is that I'm pretty good at logically putting content together in terms of how it flows, in terms of what I think needs to go at the top, and then, you know, sort of subordinate subtopics that would go below that. And I'm pretty good at that. And for me, it's important because part of my job as an online publisher is to organize information. Like, seriously, there's probably not a lot of content I publish on any of my niche sites that can't already be found on the web elsewhere, okay? What I want to do is I want to take information, and it's going to be from maybe a whole bunch of variety of sources, and then there's going to be the opinion of the writer, and we're going to put it together, and we're basically serving up on a platter a bunch of information, and it's got to be organized nicely, and that really helps the reader. Organization is important. I mean, think about any nonfiction book you've read. Typically speaking, they're well organized, and there's a lot of thought that goes into how they're organized and the order of the chapters and everything else. Because if it's not organized, it's just a big mishmash of information, doesn't really help anyone. So do pay attention to your logical sequence. That's then with the outlining section. You remember, all the stuff I'm talking about today, you can always go back and fix it or change it. Okay. Mistakes will be made. You will get better at this in 2 years from now, especially if you're starting out. You're going to come back and look at the content you're putting out today and think, wow, you know, I could definitely see I was just starting out. It's not as good as what I'm doing, you know, now. So, and I do that all the time. So, you know, don't sweat it too much. These points are really merely to help you up your game at this point. Okay, now I'm a hypocrite for the next point, and that is no spelling mistakes or grammatical errors. I'm pretty good at not having grammatical errors, but spelling mistakes, it's just a problem of mine. If you've read Fasex emails and Fasex blog posts, you see them, no doubt. People point them out to me, and you know, I use Grammarly, and which boggles the mind that I would still publish stuff with spelling mistakes, but I do. And so I accept it. It's just a weakness of something that's going to end up on my sites. I just don't spot the stuff. But if you can, it's worth taking the extra effort to avoid that. Because I happen to have a weakness for it, doesn't mean that it's okay. I used to make jokes about it. I think when you're publishing an informational or an educational type niche site, it's important that it not have spelling mistakes or grammatical errors that really diminishes the credibility of the site. I think I consider that when I read an article on particular sites, it's sloppy. You just sort of like, well, if they're this sloppy, how accurate is the information? So I've sort of changed my position. I do view it as fairly important. So put an effort in that. Grammarly helps. Again, it's amazing to me that I can still miss the red underline in Grammarly and have spelling mistakes. Next up, this is a stylistic-ish matter, and that is large text. Typically, veer toward much larger text on your websites. I much prefer reading, especially on the phone, but even on tablets and desktop, larger text. I don't want a strain to read. I don't want sentences crunched together really closely, like lots of white space. Most people prefer this. It's just easier to read. There's a limit, though. You don't want to go so big, especially on mobile, where a few sentences takes up the whole screen, because that gets it cumbersome to read too. There's a middle ground there. I would give you a font number, but that again is going to vary depending on which font you use. They're all so different. But I tend to be in the 15 to even 18 range for fonts. I don't even know what font I typically use. I use usually the default on the theme. I don't even know what that is, but I just look at it. I always check all my content on all devices to make sure that the font's big enough. Next up, point of view. I tend to like articles written in the first person. It gives it a little bit more of a personal touch, but not every article that I publish is in the first person. You know, it's really going to depend on your niche and how you want your site to present itself. There's a good argument for third person as well. This is really a personal preference. I tend to just get the sense when I read other websites and when it's written in the first person, I get the sense that there's a real human being behind the writing and they're talking to me, and I like that when I'm reading. So I tend to go with first person, but third person is totally acceptable as well. Visuals for your content, really important. You can overdo this, but at the same time, visuals can do so much for your content. They can also help you get a lot of inbound links if other sites use your visuals and link to you as a reference. So, I mean, obviously there's images. Images are one of those things where, you know, if it's a purely visual article where essentially like it's a gallery of something like that, obviously there'll be a lot of images. But if it's more of an informational article, you don't want to like load it up with so many images that people miss the text below and above the image and then not really get into the heart of the article. So for an info article that's maybe 2,000 words, I might use anywhere from 4 to 5 images. If it's a gallery, I'll use tons, but really that's about it. And I think it's a sweet spot for me. Let's say it's a listicle that you're doing and it's got 18 points in it. I might put 4 or 5, maybe 7 or 8 images for a few of the list items, and then that's it, but not for everyone. Unless something specifically needs an image or a graphic or a chart or something to enhance and help, you know, bolster that particular section of the article, then of course I will add more. So, you know, there's images, there's custom illustrations, which can be great. You can check on Fiverr. People can draw you anything on Fiverr really fast, and it's not a lot of money. So that's a great resource. Charts and graphs easily produced in Google Sheets. If you have any sort of data, you can create this in minutes. It's free. You can download it as a ping and upload it. It's super easy. Lots of really, really useful for content. Tables right now, a Gutenberg editor, you can create your own little table in there. Maybe use a table plugin. I just use the Gutenberg one. Be careful with tables. Don't go too wide. Don't go too many columns, because then it's a nuisance on mobile. And most of our sites these days are going to have at least 40 and sometimes 60 or 70% of our traffic is mobile. So you really got to cater to the mobile viewer. Timelines are cool. Ultimate add-ons for Gutenberg, which is a block library by the people behind Astra Theme. They have this really cool block called Timelines, and you can create these awesome looking timelines. I like them. They look great on mobile. They look great on desktop. They're super easy to use. I think they add a really interesting component to content. I don't use it for every article. I use it when it's relevant, and I think it's kind of cool. So something to keep in mind. And then, you know, your usual fancy affiliate showcases. I tend to like Lasso. I don't use Lasso on all my sites just because I really pare down the plugins. But if you're going to use any affiliate plugins and do a lot of affiliate marketing in your content, especially your money pages, Lasso is a good solution. There are some others out there. I like Lasso because you can do Amazon, but you can also do other merchants. So you can really create some really nice displays. You can also just stylize some really nice affiliate boxes and displays just with Gutenberg now. Gutenberg is a full styling page builder. It's awesome. And in fact, I tend to err toward that. You can put in columns and buttons and lines and different color backgrounds and so forth. So you can create your own, and you can avoid the costs and the use of a plugin. Next up, make it easy to read and understand. Most of the audiences that we're serving with our sites are not like super highly technical, not reading jargon. We're not industry insiders or anything. We're just serving. I tend to veer toward lifestyle blogs, so that's the audience. I try to keep it simple. Obviously, with Fatsacks, I can throw in all sorts of the jargon out there and people are going to get it. But, you know, for my niche sites, no, I'm not going to get all technical and jargony. I really want to dumb it down. I want to write for the layperson so that they understand it. And also stylistically, make it easy to read. Short paragraphs, lots of white space. Make it easy for people rather than the strain, and they'll really appreciate it. They actually probably won't even really notice it. Typically, people are going to notice when it's badly done. They're going to notice when it's well done. Next up, super, super, super important. Serve the search intent of the keyword you're targeting. Okay, really think about it. Make sure that there's no confusion behind it, that you're, if it takes 800 words, great. If it takes 4,000 words, fine, whatever. But really focus that article on serving that search intent. That's super important. Put yourself in the shoes of the person who puts that search term in Google. What would you want to, what article would you want? I ask myself for that so many times. I constantly go back to old content and I'm looking at it, and that's foremost in my mind. Is this what I would want to see if I were searching it? And a lot of times I'm quite happy with what I already have. There's a little bit I can add or improve, but generally speaking, I nailed the search intent. It's generally an intuitive thing. I mean, you write about a topic, but you really want to make sure that you nail it really good. Also, write for the medium. If you have an email newsletter, that's probably going to be done differently than it would, than say blog posts. Now, Most of the content on Fat Sacks is actually me publishing the emails. I write most things for the Fat Sacks audience, which is an engaged audience. I start with email. Email is the greatest delivery platform for this particular niche, not for my other niches, but for this particular niche. So I'm going to write differently. It's going to be more personal, and then I'll publish it as a post. If you go to Fat Sacks, you might find some product reviews or software reviews. I typically don't put that in the emails. They're going to be written more in the usual for the website style. So most of my articles are written for website publishing, not in emails. But depending on, you know, maybe you have the video scripts you want to do. Maybe you have an email newsletter. You know, all of this writing should vary depending on the medium that you're delivering the content. Also, write for your audience. This really obviously kind of fits in with write for, you know, make sure the search intent is proper and the article serves the search intent, but also write for your audience. If it's a celebrity blog, you don't need to get all technical. You can just have fun. In fact, injecting a lot of casual language and just having fun with it totally works really well. If you're more in a technical niche, you know, serve the people. They don't necessarily are looking to, you know, for a couple of chuckles reading your article. If it's like, let's say a model train, hobby niche, you know, I suspect that people who are really into model trains are really into it. They want the technical info. They want the info. They're not there for, you know, you to, you know, talk about your, big party night last Saturday and making jokes about it. They want to read about whatever it is specific to model trains. So definitely think about your audience and write for them. Okay. The next point is it fits in your niche unless you're testing a frolic topic. Okay. So I've made the mistake of going too broad in sites, going outside the scope of really what the site is about. And typically it doesn't work in the long run. I actually tested it with a particular site where I literally included, I don't know, 6 or 7 massive niches all in one site. It was trying to be a everything in the kitchen sink site. It worked for a while and then it stopped working. So I would not do that again. So you want to write for something that fits within your niche. Now, you can branch out. There are shoulder niches, which are niches related, and you can branch out. And I do that all the time. I tend still to veer toward wider, broader niches, but still you want to fit in within that. You don't want, here's the test for me, okay? You don't want an article on your site that if somebody who showed up on your site, let's say for a totally different article, saw this other article and would think, well, that's kind of weird. Why would they put that on there? Okay. If that's a question that would show up and, you know, somebody would have when they visit your site, you've gone too broad. Now, obviously we all don't think the same, but generally speaking, I get that. If I went to a site and I saw something, now, if it's a niche site and I could tell it was a niche site and they're covering all really great info on a particular topic. And then there's this like article way out of left field. Let's say it's a crafting site. It's all about crafts, DIY, stuff like that. And then there's this like how to make money online site. Now, some of these people actually do this, right? They kind of straddle it. It's kind of an interesting strategy. I think it kind of works, but I think you got, generally speaking, if I saw this sort of like how to make money with crypto, for instance, on a crafting site, I'd be like, okay, this is weird. This is like veering towards spam. I'm out of here, right? So just kind of keep that in mind. That's the litmus test for me. A few other minor things. Formatting is really important. Using your heading tags, heading 2, heading 3, heading 4. I say this to writers I hire, and I'm still amazed that sometimes writers don't actually know what a heading 2 and a heading 3 tag. And I'm thinking, you're a web writer, you write for the web, and you don't know this? Like, seriously? Okay, crash course. Here it is. Make sure you do it properly. It's really important to use the proper heading tags. Same with you know, just generally like table of contents in there. I use simple TOC, Gutenberg block it's a free plugin for my table of contents now. And you just want it to look good. I tell everybody who ever works on a article on my site, every person in the whole workflow, I say, after you've done what your job is, I want you to preview it on the front end. Always look on the front end. And then I will spot check also on mobile. It's really important to me that these articles look good, that there's no dumb formatting issues. I think that can really diminish the quality of a site, the credibility of a site, So it's, for me, almost formatting is more important than proper spelling. I'm probably wrong in that, but it's that important. All right, let's talk about affiliate links. That's a can be a very important part of the checklist when you're producing content. You know, there's actually, I link to a lot of merchants where I could put an affiliate link, but I don't. I cool it on the affiliate links. I always worry that Google's just going to think that, okay, there's too many affiliate links on the site and it's a bridge page. So I don't always put affiliate links even when I can. And it kind of serves a couple of good purposes. One is I don't end up with like more affiliate links than I think I should. Now, I could be totally wrong. Maybe Google doesn't care about affiliate links. I don't really know, but I don't know. I cool. And I don't put affiliate links when it's usually an informational article and it's not going to convert anyway. If it's going to convert well, if it's an article that's going to convert those readers and they're going to buy something, I will use affiliate links. But a lot of the informational content, even if it mentions a product or a company, is not going to convert. People are there. If they've got their research, they're not in the headspace to be buying anything. So I just don't bother. And it serves another purpose that if I'm selling a site, you know, it's a little sweetener I could say to any prospective buyers and say, you know, there's a lot of affiliate opportunities on the site. You can check. There's a lot of content where I mention or link to various brands and products. I just didn't bother putting affiliate links. And that could be a sweetener for them. I mean, obviously, you're going to look at the intent and look at how much that content may convert. And I wouldn't phrase it in a way like, wow, I think you could triple the revenue on the site if you just put in some affiliate links. I wouldn't say that, because if that were true, I would put the affiliate links on there myself, of course. But I could say there are some opportunities, and with maybe some good conversion optimization on the site and some nice boxes and stuff, that maybe you could increase the conversions and revenue that way. Conclusions. I don't like conclusions. An article, I usually just find it's fluff. I find it's a way for writers to just add another 200 words of useless drivel, and I don't like it. So I specifically instruct writers to not include a conclusion. I don't like them when I read it. I just find it childish. It's sort of like a grade 4 book report. And in conclusion, it's like, yeah, I just read the article. I don't need you to tell me again. Okay, maybe that's a bit of a hard-nosed stance, but that's my view of it. The only exception is if it's some sort of a review or an opinion piece, okay? So the review would basically be my verdict of a product, okay? And so I'll go through an entire, the pros and cons and blah, 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 the usual review stuff that we put in an article, and then the verdict at the end. Boom, that's my conclusion. That makes sense. I like that for that, but that's really about the only exception to the no conclusion rule I have. And lastly, the latest consideration when it comes to good content is the good page speed scores, which is basically the Google Insights tool, which will score your content on mobile and desktop. Basically, when you're putting out content, you know, in the old days, we had every plugin and we could imagine and create all these really cool little things. We put quizzes in, we put all this stuff, all this junk, all this code gets in there, it's bloated. And then, you know, recently, like a year or two ago, Google started announcing that it's going to be this page speed score thing, and that's going to be a ranking factor. And that, you know, I went through and did a ton of work to get my page speed scores up on all my sites. What that means is a lot of the old bells and whistles I used to include in a lot of the content, I don't do that anymore because it hurts the page speed score. Page speed score is important. And so I use just what I need. I really just try to keep it to images and text at the end of the day, maybe some tables, but that's simple HTML. I don't embed a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm, you know, anything that takes a snippet of code, I avoid as much as humanly possible. So keep this in mind when you're crafting your content and putting it all together. Use the Gutenberg blocks exclusively if you're adding anything. And if there isn't a Gutenberg block for it, really think twice about it. I mean, how important is that little bell and whistle feature you want to add to your site? Page speed scores are important. I think they're going to get more important. And so it's something you definitely want to keep in mind when you're publishing content. That's a wrap. That was long. It's a lot of things. Doesn't apply to every article, but it's a good overview. If you think about these things and apply some to a lot of your content, you can end up making it better, and that's the goal. I believe that good content, generally speaking, will do well, but remember, it always, always, always hinges on really good keyword research right off the get-go. If you do bad keyword research, the best content in the world is probably not going to get any traffic. If you do great keyword research, half-decent, mediocre content can actually do well. Stellar, epic content can do really well. Thanks for listening.